Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to Travolting. Covering She's So Lovely. Enjoy the episode. Yeah.
All Hello, right. Jeff.
Hi, Stuart. So, right off the bat, have you seen the poster for this movie?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to show you the poster for this movie, and the audience is invited to look. I know I'm starting, like, literally right off the bat. But
yeah, you are. I was going to say you look very lovely today.
Thank you.
Nice shirt
some
on.
Some could say that I'm so lovely. But I'm going to show you the poster for this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that I have seen.
So, you look at this poster.
Right.
Take a good look at it.
Okay.
I have been convinced since we started the show that this was a rom-com. I've spent 26 episodes building up to this being a rom-com.
Wait, were you like, have you seen this movie before?
I've not.
But you were aware of its presence.
I was aware it was a movie that we were covering. I looked at that poster and I'm like, oh, it's a rom-com.
And that had been taking a piece of your attention.
Yes, that had been stuck in my brain. Because, like, when we first started the show, I went through every movie we're covering and, like, looked at the posters and put them in a list for us.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, well, rom-com. Didn't look anything else into it. I straight up told Becca this morning, hey, I'm watching Michael and then this rom-com.
And cut to 3 months later after we start the podcast. Yes. And you actually watch it today.
I start this movie.
Yeah.
Like, first frame is, like, Robin, like laying in a ditch, taking shots of whiskey, smoking a cigarette, being like assaulted by James Gandolfini. And I was like, oh, this is not a rom-com.
Not a rom-com.
And I was like, who directed this? And I saw Nick Cassavetes.
The same director of The Notebook.
Yes, The Notebook.
Which is a very much a rom-com.
Yes, which is very much a romantic movie.
But... as many of our film fans may know, Nick Cassavetes is the son of John Cassavetes. And
yeah, launch it right into the context corner here, folks.
he wrote this film in the 80s.
Yes, and he passed away before he could make it.
86?
Was it somewhere? I think he died 88.
88.
Let me confirm that. Yeah, he died 89.
And February. Sean Penn was attached for a while.
Sean Penn was attached to the original John Cassavetes version. He dropped out during the cast John Cassavetes version.
Over 10 years you're talking about this
and
movie.
Then John Cassavetes kind of put it on the back burner. He never got around to making it before he passed away.
Right.
8 years later, his son, Nick, decides to honor his dad. He's, you know, started getting traction as a director, and he's going to make John Cassavetes' movie,
right,
for lack of a better term. It's like that the Orson Welles movie that never got released. They decided to make his last movie.
Or it's like AI.
AI, yeah. With Kubrick.
Kubrick and Spielberg.
Yeah, and then everyone's like, the ending is so Spielberg, and it's like Kubrick wrote that ending. But anyway.
Thank you. I was about to say the same thing.
AI is an amazing movie.
It is. It's pretty good.
AI makes me want to weep. Maybe the saddest movie ever.
Yeah.
But this is also an extremely sad movie.
Yeah.
I found this deeply sad, deeply depressing, which going in expecting a rom-com, I was a bit thrown off.
You know, sad is a pretty useful adjective to use. I would probably go by the phrase of fucked up.
Yes.
This is a fucked up movie.
Yes. This is a very fucked up movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's very in line with Cassavetes.
Yes.
He, you know, pioneer of a lot of, you know, independent cinema ideas in the 70s and then into the 80s.
Yeah.
This kind of like focusing on people who don't necessarily get focused on in films and displaying them as they really kind of are, for lack of a better term, like just showing things that actually happen without trying to adhere it to like a Hollywood structure or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it's a I wouldn't say it's a lovely result, but
it's not a lovely result. 'Cause Nick Cassavetes I would say
his father, he is not.
His father, he is not.
This movie,
and it is given the 90s treatment.
Yes,
very much the 90s treatment.
Mm-hmm. This movie needed John Cassavetes to tie it all together,
and it needed to come out in the 80s.
Yeah, and it needed to come. I think it could have worked in the 90s had John directed it.
I don't know. How old was he in the 90s? How old would he have been if he had done this in 97?
John Cassavetes, he was 59 when he died, so he would have been in his 60s.
Not terribly old, but I feel like the culture of Hollywood had changed so much by this time that
yes,
it's going to get the treatment one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right?
I mean, his movies were always filmed for such micro budgets or small budgets that it never wasn't ever really a huge issue.
Yeah.
He kind of worked outside the system. This movie has a very big budget.
Right.
It has $18 million.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, one of... And I want to emphasize, I do like this movie. I actually like this movie. I actually like this movie.
Okay.
I didn't love it. This is a 7 out of 10 for me.
I would say I'm in the same boat. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
I would put it at a 6 out of 10.
Yes.
Whereas there are some bits and pieces where I'm like, okay, that's interesting.
You can see the movie this is trying to be.
Yeah.
And the performances are universally very strong in this.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But it whether it's because different director, different time, whatever it is, it doesn't cross the finish line, but it still does better than some of the other competitors could have, is my strained analogy for it.
Yeah, I think we're on the same wavelength with this movie for the most part. That,
but before we get too deep into the movie, I'm going to wheel it back to the context corner.
Yeah.
So we've gone into how this movie kind of came around. It's John Cassavetes' script. His son makes it many years later. Sean Penn comes back to the movie.
Yeah.
I cannot find too much in the way of the making of this movie, but I would assume kind of as a way to honor John Cassavetes' original choice.
Yeah.
Sean Penn comes in. Robin Wright, at this point,
Robin Wright Penn,
comes into play, his wife. They have a natural chemistry, which I think really does sing in the movie.
Yeah.
And then Travolta plays the third, who on the poster, the reason I thought this was wrong, he's like smiling in the side, like, yeah, it's me.
You think it's going to be like, oh, it's like a little two guys are in love with the same girl type of movie.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like two guys in love with the same girl.
And the friendly competition, and manly men.
Essentially, it is that, but not that, friendly competition.
But a lot more violent, yes. A lot more aggressive.
This is like
hostile.
This is essentially what I imagine a rom-com directed by John Cassavetes would be like.
Yes.
So in that sense, I was kind of into that concept. Like, what if we just made a scumbum rom-com? Like, what would that be?
Like this.
Yes.
Well, I think, I think it was Nick Cassavetes who made a comment where it was the, you know, oftentimes we think of the city life of the impoverished to be the most dramatic, but oftentimes it's the high life suburbia where we see the most crazy events. And that's what this movie's trying to do.
Yeah, this movie's trying to draw a correlation to that. No matter where you are, there's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
And sometimes the thing that seems simpler is worse than the thing that you think that you're afraid of.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of like ideas in that general vein in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Travolta at this period has just come off of, you know, Michael. He's in the String of Hits.
Yeah.
This is more or less, and we'll talk about this.
This is a critical hit.
This gets good reviews,
but
it is a box office failure. It's actually his first box office failure, if we discount White Man's Burden, which we do.
Yeah.
Post Pulp Fiction. I don't think this necessarily hurts him, but it also doesn't help.
Because Get Shorty and I'm just thinking about the ones that were dual critical hits and box office hits. Because again, last week we talked about Michael, which was the opposite. Box office hit, not a critical hit.
Yeah.
We talk about the week before that with Phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Kind of a lukewarm critical hit.
And then a decent box office.
And a lukewarm box office hit. Mm-hmm. Like, okay on both fronts.
Yeah.
Week before that, Broken Arrow.
Same lukewarm critical hit, but big box office hit.
Yeah. and Get Shorty, which is a great critical hit.
And box office
hit. Box office hit.
Pulp Fiction, obviously both makes an insane amount of money.
So for the most part, like, he's never had it to where it's been very lopsided critically.
Yeah.
Like, great box office failure. We've had critical failures, but box office hits.
His star hasn't been scuffed yet.
Exactly.
And I think his performance in this is good, and his, like, position in it is almost tertiary to the point that it doesn't impact him one way or the other.
Right. But on the same note, I just thought of, like, a sort of a topic that we might have on this episode in particular, because it goes back to a film like Blowout.
Yeah.
And the concept of a movie that is, because I won't say She's So Lovely is ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It's not. Like, it's
of its time.
It's of its time.
In the sense of the 80s when it was originally meant to come out.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the John Cassavetes screenplay, no very clear spine, A plot. Rather, it's just an it's more of a demonstration that you're witnessing more so. And I think that's kind of run its course throughout once we're in the 90s where we're into the blockbuster explosive.
And the indie boom of the 90s is different than the indie boom of like
exactly,
the
70s. Exactly. Yeah. People have an expectation for an indies in the 90s. And I think the Cassavetes
style. I think people didn't know what to make of this.
Exactly.
Movie.
Exactly. Now, with that being said, let's dilute this topic down to even a more simpler concept, which is like when you have a movie that critically is good, but is a box office failure, does it deserve the scuff mark on an actor's track record as it does?
So we deserved. I don't think so. If it gets like critic, if it's a good movie and it doesn't make money,
right?
Like, I don't, I'm trying to think of a recent like mega flop that was actually a very good movie. I'm trying like Blade Runner 2049 did not make a lot of money. Did not do very well.
Did it make back its budget or?
It made its budget for like it was like a $200 million movie, and it made more or less that. Let me get the exact amount made.
Yeah,
but it's basically that. I mean, that's a very crazy example, but it's a movie that has come out recently. Everyone who saw it loved it. Didn't make money. And I don't think that necessarily hurt anyone involved.
No,
I mean, Denny's making Dune.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling's still working. Harrison Ford's still working. He's making Indiana Jones 5 right now.
Yeah.
Insane, which is insane.
Yeah, I'm it is a tough concept to even think about in modern perspective because
we don't live in an outlets, we don't necessarily live in an age of movie stars
the
anymore.
Platforms and outlets are totally totally different. When something's not good financially, there's always Netflix.
Yeah,
and then there are different numbers that you judge it on.
I hate the sentence I'm about to say, but like, content and IP are the stars now.
Yeah,
there aren't as many movie stars nowadays as there were back in the day. There's more actors, but there are less movie stars.
Yeah.
And this is a star like passion vehicle. And I think that they're willing to like, I don't think anyone holds those movies down unless they're like aggressively bad when they come out.
Yeah, right.
But when it comes to Travolta in this movie, he's playing a very like supporting role.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression this is more or less a favor on his end.
Because
this movie it's a Miramax film produced by Harvey and Bob Weinstein, the most reputable guys in Hollywood.
Yeah. Total nice guys.
One of them who's definitely not in jail right now. The other one probably should be. and I get the impression that he was kind of put... They restarted his career with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I get the impression, because I don't see him at this point in his career with like the megastar that he is.
Taking on a role
like this.
Yeah.
I get the impression that they were kind of just like, hey... We scratch your back, you scratch ours. Pop up in this movie. It's like 3 weeks of work.
I don't know if you agree with this, though, but this felt like a perfect shoe size fit for John.
Yes, he is a perfect fit for this role, and I'm glad he agreed to it.
Yeah, like, just, it reminded me of Interstellar with Matt Damon.
But, like, every other movie he's in during this time period, he is number one star. His face is the poster, except for this one.
He's on the poster.
He is on the poster, but...
But he doesn't show up until, like, halfway through the movie.
But he's third build. He's the and.
Yeah.
It's... And John Travolta as Joey. Like, even if he is... Even if he's, like, he's taken the supporting role for the first time in a while, he's getting the full...
Supporting.
He's getting the Sam Jackson treatment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it is interesting, but we talked about this before, where that was sort of the downfall for him twice, where he got it stuck in his head that he's only the leading man A-list, and he ignored. This is like, you know, if... Because I read it... Well, now, as you say it, I can see that, where this was a favor to be done, but I wish it wasn't. I wish this was something that he knew was a calculated, smart move, because these are the roles he honestly needs to take once in a while.
And even as I say that, he did also... He was an executive producer listed on this movie.
Okay.
So I get the impression that, in addition to, like, hey, John, I feel like he was also like, this is literally the last opportunities I'm ever going to get to work in a Cassavetes movie. Even though it's like only half a Cassavetes movie.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, all right, I'll take the hit and I'll do this one.
Right.
And he's like, I'll slap my name on as a producer. This movie's also produced by Sean Penn. Mm-hmm. And then Gerard Depardieu is an executive producer.
I don't know who that is.
He's a French actor. he's a obelisk, I think his name is. He used to be like the ultimate, like, good looking guy in France. And then I'll show you a picture of what he looks like nowadays.
Not good looking. Oh, God. Oh, God. What was his name again for our audience?
Gerard Depardieu. And then... Oh, he was. I take it back. He was never, like, the ultimate good looking guy. But he was, like, a bigger star. And then he turned into a bigger star.
You had to do it.
I had to do
you
it.
You had to do it. Oh, Jesus.
But I don't know what his involvement in this movie is about. I guess he was just like, yeah, I'll throw some money at that or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. Any more context to this, really?
That's basically the extent of the context. It comes out in 1997, Miramax release. It comes out in August, though, so I think they kind of knew they weren't going to make this an Oscar play. Because August is the dumping grounds.
Yeah.
I guess they were just like, we'll just put it there. But yeah, I guess we can just dive more or less right into the movie.
Sick.
Because we start with some accents. That's the first thing I wrote down.
Well, we start with a quote about love.
Yes.
I don't remember what the quote was, though.
I don't either. I should have written it down.
But
we're such great critics.
It opens up with a quote about love.
Yes.
It kind of leads you into...
We start with a helicopter shot of some, like, city.
Yeah.
I don't know where.
I think it's New York.
I don't think it's New York City, because you would see New York City, because you can see too many trees and whatnot. It definitely looks like New York or New Jersey, and it sounds like it sounds like it.
Could be Boston.
Oh, no, they're talking in like the New York Jersey accent.
They're not talking the Boston accent.
They're not talking like JFK. They're all like, hey, how you doing? What's the fuck's wrong with you? You know,
that's not Boston.
No, that's like Jersey, New York. It's like Joe Pesci, Robin Wright in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah, we more or less start right off with Robin Wright, and she emerges from an apartment room and goes up to a phone and is like dialing.
She can't find
her husband Eddie.
Eddie, played by Sean Penn.
Played by Sean Penn, who real life husband at the time.
Yeah.
And at the same time, James Gandolfini, he of Get Shorty fame,
yes,
emerges from the same room and is like, hey, baby, come back in here. while her husband's away.
Foreshadowing.
While her husband's away, James is trying to play. And he's like, here, take a drink. And she's like, I'm pregnant. I don't drink. I don't smoke. And meanwhile, she's smoking a cigarette, which is funny.
Yeah. They do that a few times.
Yeah, she's literally like chain smoking, like chain drinking shots in this movie.
Yeah.
She's pregnant.
That baby should have fetal alcohol syndrome, but whatever.
She eventually just like is desperate to find her husband, so she leaves the apartment, and she's looking for. And she goes to a bar, and there's Harry Dean Stanton in it, and a bunch of other people she knows. I'm so glad Harry Dean Stanton's in this movie. What a reassuring presence in a movie.
Yeah. It's like you always see him and you feel like everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. So have you ever watched his deleted scene from The Avengers?
No.
So he pops up for that cameo, which I always thought was very strange.
When the Hulk crashes down. Like, yeah.
That's a very odd choice because all he does is just like, son, you have a condition.
Son, you have a condition.
And it's funny. Yeah. But I was like, why did they put him there? And then there's a deleted scene where he kind of gives the Hulk a pep talk right afterward. And you're like, that's what you put Harry Dean Stanton in your movie for.
And they deleted that.
They deleted that.
God, fuck you.
You put him in to put this, like, he's a steady hand. Whatever you need him to do, he's just going to come in, get out, and do it.
Am I batshit crazy that he was in that David Lynch tractor movie?
Yes, he plays...
He plays the brother that he's brother, going out for. Great role.
He's great in that. It's only like one scene at the end, but he's great in it. Called? The Straight Story.
The Straight Story.
Great movie.
Great movie, by the way. Yeah. I'm glad you showed it to me. I credit you for showing that one to me.
I love The Straight Story.
It is Harry Dean Stanton?
Yes. He's a lovely actor. He's in Twin Peaks. He pops up in...
Yes.
I actually saw one of his, if not his last movie, in theaters a few years ago. It's called Lucky. He's like 93 in it. He's fantastic. David Lynch also acts in the movie. It's a very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see, he's just a steady hand. I'm glad he's in this movie. And I'm glad he's in this scene where she's in the bar.
Yeah.
So she's in the bar and she's like, I'm looking for Eddie. And they're all like, he's like, yeah, you know, she goes away. He goes away
you
sometimes.
You married a grifter.
Yeah, you married a grifter. He'll come back. And I wrote, like, this is extremely scuzzcore movie. Like, this is just, like, a scumbum, like, movie about, like, these, like, low-status, like, people who just, like, live their lives in, like, a blue-collar environment.
Yeah.
In, like, downtown some city.
Right.
Because we never see what city.
And in the bar is James Gandolfini. His character name is Kiefer.
He's back.
Is he the landlord of the building, or am I crazy thinking that?
I think he just lives there.
Okay. They never said he was, like, the building manager or anything, but I felt vibes of, like, he ran the building or something, but maybe
I just think he just lives there.
He just has, like, a commanding presence.
Yes.
Like, you see him, and he's, like, he's the boss of something or someone, you know? That's why I love his role in Get Shorty so much, is because he is the henchman.
Yeah.
But you see him, and because of his Tony Soprano role, you just think of him.
Can we just shout out him and Get Shorty being a stuntman as a henchman? And it's funny because he's so inept at his job because he's only ever good at missing punches as a stuntman.
We said this on Get Shorty.
I just wanted
to
shout that out again because it's so funny.
It is pretty funny. great role for him. Great role for James Gandolfini. But yeah, so she starts drinking with Kiefer.
Yeah.
Her name in this is Maureen.
She also goes by Mo.
My grandma's name is Maria.
Or Murphy. Or Murph.
Yeah.
She goes by a few names.
Yeah. I just know her as Maureen because my grandma's name is Maureen. Oh, shout out to you, Grandma.
That's sweet. Shout out Grandma Elmore. Or is it Ness. Grandma? Grandma Ness. Ness.
My mom's maiden name is Ness.
Gotcha.
You can probably hack into my bank account now. It's one of the security questions.
Already at this point in the movie, Robin Wright is giving a performance.
Has she ever had a tiptoe movie where she hasn't been good but yet becomes good? Because I always thought of her as good from the get-go.
No, she's always given a performance.
Yeah, right.
Another steady hand, but just like a really reliable actress.
Yeah.
From The Princess Bride onward, she's always been good.
Yeah, and this, I really like the role that she's doing because I don't think I've seen her take a role similar to this in a hot minute.
Yes.
Very much not a Robin Wright role.
Yes.
Also a commanding presence actor.
This is, in a sense, I thought about this. She's kind of playing Jenny in the midpoint of Forrest Gump, except like... Except like 10 times worse. Like,
yes, I agree.
Whereas Forrest Gump is a movie that admonishes her for being a person with free will. This movie is empathizing with her.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump's a movie where it's like, look at Jenny. She's so stupid.
She's so mean because she doesn't want to be with
Forrest. She doesn't want to be with her guy.
And it's like, she just wants to...
Yeah, she wants to live her life and get away from her abusive childhood.
Right.
You keep forcing her back to it.
Yeah, and you're judging her for it. Fucking pricks.
Yeah. But in this movie, she's...
We're celebrating her for
freedom. We're celebrating that. Or not celebrating, but we're empathizing with that.
Yeah.
But she's like, you know, very stressed. Can't find her husband.
She's drinking more with Kiefer, and they get drunk, and then
go back to her apartment or his apartment.
And he drags her kind of into his apartment. They drink some more. There's like a weird little montage-y bit.
He gives her some coke.
Oh, they do coke?
Yeah, they do coke.
Oh, I didn't.
At one point, it's very. I don't think you actually see the coke, but she's like sniffing on the table.
Yeah.
But they do some coke, and then he attempts to rape her. I don't know if he succeeds.
Well, like he assaults her.
He punches her.
And beats her up, but we don't actually get, like, cause she gets knocked out in his apartment, and then it cuts away. So it doesn't actually, like, confirm anything that happened other than the assault itself. Yeah. And so she's all beaten up, and the next thing, she's driving. Okay, so for the audience, Jeff just showed me a note in his notebook. I was expecting a rom-com, and we get like a sexual assault scene.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty brutal.
But she goes back to her apartment, and the next day she goes to the bar again. She slips, and she walks in, and who's there? Her husband, Eddie.
Did we miss before that she went to like a psychiatric facility?
Oh yes, she goes to a psychiatric facility
and she talks to like a social worker or somebody.
She's like, about her husband. She's like, and they're like, did he hit you? And she's like, no, he would never.
Yeah.
And the social worker doesn't believe her.
Right. They think it's an abuse thing, but her case is that if he looks at me and he thinks somebody did this to me, he's going to want to kill him. And I want you guys to know.
Yeah. It's like stop the murder.
It's a bit weird for her character, in my opinion, that she would be like this free-spirited, not very high on the totem pole status person.
I think, and yet she very much doesn't want to be in that position. I think she's trying to, like, she doesn't want to be there, but she's just addicted to it.
Right, but even like later in the movie when she's in the other side of it, she doesn't seem to have it. Besides, her fucking hair gets brunette and long. Her character's not really that different.
Yeah, I think it's very much that as much as she like wants to not be in that world, she's so like she's addicted to it, just as she's addicted to the drugs and the cigarettes and the alcohol and whatnot.
Yeah, and so I just felt it kind of weird that she went through the trouble of like going to a psychiatric facility to warn them of a potential murder her husband might commit for her getting beat up.
Yeah.
So, So then after
she doesn't want him to get hurt.
Right. So then she goes to a bar and she's like and her car broke down. So she's been like walking around in the rain. Yeah. She's cold and wet.
She slips at one point.
She slips. And so she's just getting the treatment in the beginning of this movie. She gets the treatment the entire film.
Yes.
Just like
abused by everything. By the movie.
By the movie, really. Yeah. And so she does go to the bar, and then Eddie's there.
Sean Penn.
We get like the most Cassavetes like dialogue scene ever, where they're like across the bar from each other.
Yeah.
And it's like they're married.
Yeah.
They're a married couple, and yet it's like they're meeting each other and seeing each other like they're distant friends. And like, oh, hey, Eddie. And it's like, oh, hey. And he's like with other people and friends.
For a second, I was like, wait, is Sean Penn not playing her husband?
And that's right. That's what my thought was, too. Yeah. Like, I'm like, this is.
And then they say Eddie, and I'm like, oh, okay, he is.
Yeah. And then there was the whole, like the reason why I say, like, you know, the Cassavetes dialogue, because something that from other different screenwriters in the same way is like the unnecessary ums and whats and what'd you say and like repeating yourself and things like get her a drink. And it's like, hey, I don't really want a drink. It's like, well, what kind of drink do you want? And it's like, what? And it's like, I said, what kind of drink do you want? It's like, oh, well, if I had, and it's like all these like the passive like dialogue, and it's like, just go to the bar.
For a modern example, it's very much like Uncut Gems in that way.
Yes.
Yes. Which is very much indebted to the Cassavetes films.
Yeah, very much so. And so once she gets closer to him, he sees her bruised face, and she immediately passes off as I slipped and fell.
Yeah.
And he buys that.
Yeah, and he's like, we got to get this girl some alcohol.
Yeah.
Gives her a drink and then takes her to the emergency room.
Knowing that she's pregnant, too.
Knowing that she's pregnant.
Goes to the emergency room. The baby's fine.
Yeah. And the doctor tries to do another test, and Sean Penn, like, sees his hand is mildly near her.
He has to like press on her abdomen to make sure like there's no like soaring or anything.
And Eddie gets jealous.
Yeah.
And like, he goes in, he's like, all right, she's fine. The baby's fine. We're out.
Yeah. So it pretends to like Eddie's hostility towards any treatment towards Rob, you know, his wife. So I'm just looking at my notes here. Baby's fine. They go out.
Yeah.
He wants to take her out. I'm going to go dancing.
Yes.
With some friends. He doesn't bring any money.
So he's like, I'll write an IOU. And the girl buys it. He charms her into the IOU.
Yeah. I mean, he gets even a couple extra bucks out of it, too. He's like, don't push it.
Yeah.
So it's like one thing that I picked up on, you know, Sean Penn's character in this is like, this is a guy who, like, poorly sweet talks himself through shit, like the haircut scene. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't pay for that.
Yeah, and he's not good, but he somehow still succeeds.
He walks out of Travolta's house, spoiler, with his wife, and like, yeah, there is some tension and conflict, but he still does it. You know, like this guy just seems like he gets his way.
Yeah,
but there's no way he gets his way through his intellect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just something. It's like
he's relentless and passionate.
It's like Domino and Deadpool. It's like the good luck thing.
Yeah.
Like, the dude just, like, flails around and just misses whatever's trying to hit his way.
Mm.
It's the only when he gets, you know, the whole him jumping out of the bar window and getting chased. That's when, like, the shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
But everything else, it's like he's just like lumping his way through life and casually, luckily, missing everything that's hitting him. And
it's never said what mental disorder he has, but it's established he has a very serious mental disorder that causes him to disappear for days at a time and then come back.
Yeah. That they're all aware of.
Yeah.
That everybody's aware of.
And they go out dancing.
Yeah.
And they have a very lovely time. And she wears her nice red dress and they dance. It's very cute. Very sweet.
They go back to their apartment.
And he is like, someone did this to you.
Well, so they go to the apartment and then they pass Kiefer's door, James Gandolfini's door.
Oh, and she starts banging
on. And she starts banging on and getting upset. And he's like, are you going to beat him up? And he's like, I don't know. Why do I want to beat him up?
Yeah.
He opens the door, takes a swing at Robin Wright. And then Eddie immediately goes to town on him. And then he turns around to say something to Maureen. And then Kiefer gets a shot off of him, knocks him out. Mm-hmm. It's a very confusing sequence of who has the upper hand, where, when, and where. Yeah. You don't know if Kiefer's the big hotshot guy who could beat up any dude, or you don't know if Eddie's the big hotshot guy who could beat up any dude, because both guys get their ass kicked by each other. So it's kind of like a weird, like, who's the person with power in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is.
Yeah.
Which
it's just chaos happening.
Yeah, it's all chaos. So after that scene, that's when he finds out, like, oh, somebody did do this to you.
And he's like, I need to know the truth. I can't be getting these fables and foibles. And
yeah. So he
starts losing it at this point.
Yeah. He starts getting enraged and he's armed at this point.
Yeah.
And that's when I write down Maureen calls the white coats.
Yes. He also, at one point, it's just like when he gets into a mood, he starts like digressing and starts like rambling with things.
Disassociating. Yeah.
And disassociating. At one point, he's just like, it starts rambling about what is hair. And he's like, tits and ass, I understand, but hair, nails, I don't get what, like, what is it? Why does it keep happening? Was it growing?
Mm-hmm.
This, I found his performance really sad.
Me too.
Like, around this part, I'm like, as, like, scary as this guy is for the situation, he just, like, he's a deeply sad person who's, like, struggling with a horrible illness.
Yeah, right. Mm. And so he's at a bar and he's drinking.
Well, first he shoots in James Gandolfini's door.
Yes.
And he's not home. So he goes to a bar to try and find him.
And he just starts drinking.
He starts drinking and rambling on about math. And he's like, 2 + 2 = 4. And he's like, our entire
reality is a simulation. We're all ones and zeros.
He says, we're all controlled by a computer and 7 women.
Yeah.
Says, that's what he says. Our entire world is controlled by a computer and 7 women. Each one has different colored hair. And he lists, like, one's blonde, one's brunette, one's red hair, blue hair, and he lists it all out because he's startlingly losing his mind.
Yeah.
And at one point, he asks Robin Wright, like, are you clairvoyant? Can you read my thoughts? Can you read other people's thoughts? Do you know what's going to happen? I think you do, in which case, be honest with me, because you already know what's going to happen. He goes to the bar and he asks for a Siberian mist. It's like a drink.
Which is, like, 3-4 different alcohols
mixed together. I wonder if it's a real drink.
What's it called?
Siberian Mist. I'm gonna look it up.
Siberian Mist. Yeah, let's look it up and see what it is. I might try to order it in the next bar I go to.
And then be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
You know, I went to a bar like
Siberian Blue Mist.
Blue Mist. What's in it?
Yeah. Champagne, gin, lime, scotch, Sprite, tequila, white rum, Rhine, white vodka, scotch. Wait, what?
That sounds pretty good, though.
This is listing like 30 things. I looked up Siberian's first result as a YouTube video. It says, "She's so lovely. Fuck is a Siberian Mist." Okay, so it's literally just a combination of like 30 different alcohols.
Yeah. With Sprite.
You just put champagne, gin, lime, scotch, Sprite, tequila, white rum, wine, white, and vodka.
Thought I heard vermouth there in the movie.
It's probably just something you throw a lot of drinks.
Yeah, right. So he's drinking at the bar. She calls the white coats, and they're on their way to get him. And they find him at the bar.
Yes.
And that's when he fires off a shot.
He shoots one of them. In the chest. He yells, "I'm a computer," and runs out the
window. You're all ones and zeros. And he
jumps out the window.
Shatters the glass.
And just starts running down the street. And this is a very sad sequence. It's well done where he's running down the street and like you're just getting like double exposure images of like them dancing thrown up.
Yeah.
It was like their happy moment, their like worst moment.
Yeah.
She's chasing after him, yelling like Eddie, whatnot.
Right.
Like screaming.
The chaotic nature.
He sits down on a bus bench, takes his pants off. An old woman runs away from him.
Yeah. Like he's very much lost it at this point. Like he's not really in reality anymore.
Yeah.
Cop cars show up. That's where the sadness kind of hit me too. It painted a very familiar picture.
Yeah.
That
we're of someone with mental illness who never got the help they needed.
Right.
And is just locked up for it.
Yeah. And yeah. So they're all pointing their guns at him, and Marine comes screaming in. He gets arrested and
tied up in a
he's strapped straitjacket.
Yeah, it looks tremendously sad.
Yeah.
And Robin Wright goes to see
his... They get like 5 minutes with each other, and she says, "You'll be out in 3 months.
Yeah.
I'll be here waiting for you." And then
the psychiatrist tells her like prognosis not good. It's gonna be longer than 3 months.
Cut to
10 years later.
Who's the first person we see?
John Travolta. I mean, this is second only to like Avengers Endgame, his most shocking like title card appearance.
And by the way, this cut to John Travolta midpoint of the movie.
Yes. 10 years
like,
later.
I watched this and Michael back to back.
Yeah.
How long is Michael?
An hour 45.
This is an hour and a half.
Yeah.
The extra 15 minutes felt like an extra 45 in Michael. When I reached the 45 minute when I reached the 45 minute mark in this movie, I was like, "Holy fuck, we're already halfway through this! Like, what else do we have to do?"
Yeah, but that's almost a whole other movie for the second half.
It is a whole separate movie.
Yeah,
it's a different movie, but like, and that movie goes by quick too.
Yeah,
this movie is fast paced.
Yes,
and yet it doesn't have a clear A plot.
Yeah,
like it is like we said.
There's no plot. It's just watching people in a situation.
It's a demonstrated like. What did I say before?
It's watching messy people in a situation.
Yeah, you're just watching a situation unfloral, but it's done in a way that it feels quick.
Yeah.
Even though there's nothing like continuously overarchingly happening. Mm. It's interesting. So
I just want to point out how big Travolta looks in this movie. And I don't mean like, I don't mean like fat. I mean like
big.
They shoot him to look big and frightening in this movie. Like,
yeah.
He looks...
Like stocky?
Like he looks stocky. I think
he's wearing black.
I'm almost like, is he have like height enhancers? Like he's a tall guy, don't get me wrong.
And he's always wearing like suit jackets. So like his shoulders are more pronounced.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's definitely got a stockier nature.
He looks like a football dad.
He does.
But he just looks like a big frightening.
He's always wearing darker color clothes, mostly black. So like he really stands out contrast wise, because in the second part of the scene there's not a lot of darker, there's no night stuff to my knowledge. Everything's in the daylight. Their house is white. They have a bunch of open windows, so a lot of daylight pours in, and so you see him wearing like a black suit or something. And he really stands out and we rarely see distant wide shots of him. Like I think the widest shot, we still cut him off at like the knees or something.
We're always
like,
looking up at him.
Yeah, we are I would really want to like look through this frame by frame and see how true that is. Because I think that is really accurate.
Because I just this whole time I'm like, he is big. Like, this is a frightening guy.
Yeah. It's an interesting because when we cut to Travolta, we cut to him first, not the house first, right?
We cut just to the kids run into the room and wake him and Robin right up.
And then we see the house. It's a nice house, three little girls, family.
Yeah, one of them's Eddie's daughter.
One of them is Eddie's daughter.
Two of them are John's.
Yeah. And so...
oh, his character's Joey. Joey Giamatti. Joey Giamatti, you know?
Joey Giamatti, yeah. It paints the suburban family upscale lifestyle that they're living right now.
And it paints it as exactly the same as where she was before. Like, she and her husband are fighting. He can be emotionally distant with her. She's still chain smoking. The only difference is
she has different hair.
She has different hair and a bigger house to do it all in. But it's the same situation, and now with three daughters as well.
Because he doesn't play off as the role of like an upscale business type who would feel uncomfortable around this type of behavior. Yeah. He seems just like responds with more aggression. Anger and aggression.
Yeah,
and it seems like a perfect fit.
Yeah.
For this movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you were writing like a realistically speaking, this guy would be out of his depth if he had to go to the motel that Eddie was in.
Yeah.
You know, but he just strolls in like it's, I mean, he makes a comment like, who could fucking live here? But like he has no hesitations of bringing three little girls to a
like dingy
motel.
He's just like, I'm too hotshot. They can't. Like, I'm better than all this.
Right. I'm bigger than it. And it's like, I feel like if you're writing realistically, you'd write like the fish out of water like character.
I don't know. I feel like a guy like this, who's playing like, you know, your football dad or whatever, business type, he just kind of has like such an air of arrogance to him that like, even if he is out of his depths, he just doesn't show it. Like, he walks into these rooms and is like, I've been in this shit before.
I own this.
Yeah, I own this. I own this situation.
Yeah. Which he does very, very well.
Travolta, all three performances in this, very good.
Yes. Travolta holds up with all three of them.
Yes. Before we get into the plot of this, did you want to
talk about the hair?
Yes.
All right. Cue the hair ranking. All right. Welcome to the hair ranking report. This goes with the average dung pile.
Average dung pile.
Yeah, it is nothing. Let me just look at an image of the poster again to see what his hair looks like, because it really is just the same, right?
It's the same hair he has in this period.
Yeah. Nothing really going on with this, unfortunately. Like, I don't really see. Okay, what's the list? It's gonna be quick. Don't really have much to add.
Oh, here's the list.
It's just the regular list. It's going to go in like the look who's talking range. Below basements, above Urban Cowboy.
Ooh.
At least basements had some slight floof to it.
Urban Cowboy, he had a cowboy hat on the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. So, yep, that's where it goes.
Cool.
It's just kind of normal. That's the hair ranking.
There we go. All right.
So...
So yeah, the relationship is not great.
No.
And he's especially perturbed because Eddie's getting out today.
And they all know it too.
They all know it.
Because she made sure he was aware this is the day that Eddie gets out. And I wrote this later, but it's almost like right at this moment.
Yeah.
Maureen has her mind made up.
Yeah. She says, I'm not gonna see him.
Oh, the opposite.
Well, originally she's like, I'm not going to see him. I'm not going to call him. And it's Travolta provoking her that has her change her mind.
But it's quickly.
It's very quick. Yeah. She does not take much to convince her.
Like, if we reach the halfway point, 45-minute mark, it's like the 55-minute hour mark. She's decided, I'm going to leave this family and be with Eddie.
Because that's what Travolta thinks she's going to do. And so he's just like... You know, if I got to go fucking see this guy and sort it out. And she's like, I'm not going to see him. I'm not going to call him. And he's like, where the fuck is he? Where the fuck is he?
And he like pulls Eddie into the situations. Yeah. Like,
it's Travolta's insecurity.
Yes.
In his like masculinity, which is a very big thing we've not talked about as much, but is a very prevalent theme in Travolta's movies, is he plays embodiments of masculinity a lot. And this is a very poignant point of that.
Like, I can imagine Tony Manero making these same mistakes.
Yes.
If, like, he was married to... the fuck was her name? And
like, if he had just left well enough alone.
Jackie.
Jackie, yes.
Jackie and...
Staying Alive.
And Staying Alive. If he was married to Jackie and she had a husband who she divorced but was committed to 10 years, 10 years later from 1983, so 1993, mm-hmm. just 4 years before this, Tony Manero's been married to Jackie for a while.
Yeah.
Replay this scene. I can see him doing similar things that Joey Giamatti is doing. Yeah. The masculinity embodiment.
If he just left well enough alone, been like, hey, if you want to talk about this at all, we can. It probably would have been fine.
But he invites the situation to erupt. And because
he's like, I need to prove I'm the better guy.
And I need to take my daughters to see him. Or at least the
Jeannie. Yeah. Who is Eddie's daughter.
And it's almost, at first I thought it was like, it was going to be a point to show Jeannie, look at your father. Like, if this is the guy, if you want to go live with him, this is who you'd be living with.
I think that's what it starts as.
And then it changes.
Well, first Eddie gets out and he has long hair.
Yeah.
And so the first place he goes is a salon.
And
a very trendy salon.
Well, we got to talk about the scene, though, where we first see Eddie after the time with
his psychiatrist,
Miss Green.
Miss Green.
I love that little dialogue bit where he's like, hi, I'm Miss Green. And she's like, you Miss Green or you're Miss Green? Yeah. It's like, no, I'm Miss Jane Green.
Yeah.
And
he's like, oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. I just want to make sure. And so, but that was a very sad dialogue.
Yeah.
Because he's
convinced it's only been 3 months.
He's convinced it's only been 3 months, it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
And Jane Green is fully aware that not only has Maureen divorced him, but she's remarried. Yeah.
And this
kids.
Is the first time in 10 years she's been made aware of this. Because she's like, we need to ask him questions to make sure he won't be violent when we get out.
Exactly.
And how do you feel about your wife? How would you feel if she divorced you?
And all of these questions are, it just makes you sad.
Yeah, and he's like, Sean Penn, very strong performance here, where he's trying to keep his composure because he wants to get out.
Yeah.
But he's like absolutely losing it inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's crying.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
But he does get out.
He does pass the test. Yeah. Remarkably. Like, that's what I wrote, because I think Harry Dean Stanton says it, which is like, why do they let you out? And I kind of write that down too. I'm like, why did they let this? Because like he demonstrates later in bits and pieces as he's out, like the whole breaking the wine bottle and drinking it, like just bits and pieces like that. And then the hair salon, there's like these moments where I'm like, this motherfucker's still crazy as hell.
It feels like he was like not like it's an institution where they just
lock him up, and
it didn't help him. It only just like demoralized him.
Yeah. Right.
And the only thing he had was the thought of Maureen to get back to.
There was no sense of help that really came, and it was more so he just needs to get back to Maureen that put him in the headspace of, I need to get out of here.
So he goes to the salon. It's a very trendy salon.
It's a weird ass scene.
Yes. And he asks for a haircut. And he's like, my wife was blonde. I like that. We're like, there's a cut. He now has like
long
shoulder length blonde hair.
It's
like He-Man hair.
Can I do one thing to fix it? He's like, sure, what? It's like, I'm going to take the scissors. And immediately, the hair salon's hairstylist is like, what the fuck?
The hairstylist is so pissed.
And he cuts off,
he's like, you ruined it.
Like two large strands of hair off like the sides of his bangs.
Yeah.
But later in the movie, it's like stylized.
Yeah. Harry Dean Stanton's wife cuts it for him.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah, she's like, she's like, I cut your hair now, y'all good.
Yeah, she did a much better job.
Yeah.
So, he gets a haircut. And throughout these bits and pieces with Eddie, it's intercutting more with Travolta and Maureen. Joey and Maureen fighting. And Joey's insecurity and masculinity just like escalating it overtly that he doesn't need to.
And Joey's eventually just like, where's he staying?
Yeah.
And
she tells him.
She tells him. He grabs Jeannie and drives there to the Ford's Hotel. Eddie's made aware that he's coming. Maureen and him talk on the phone very briefly.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I'm going to meet my daughter. Eddie Maureen tries to prepare him for how old she's going to be, but he doesn't fully get it until he sees her. But he starts trying to make toys for her because he wants her to like like her dad.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really like touching, sad moment where he's like trying to make toys for her.
Yeah.
Because he's like, ah, oh, this is like, he's cutting up like a newspaper into the like hand holding things.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called, like, but like the arms.
Yeah, I don't know what they're called either.
But it's just, it's tremendously sad when he gets here and he opens the door and he sees her and Travolta, who's like ready to fucking fight him.
Well, and he's like, you know how old she is? It's like, she's, you know, like, you've been locked up for 10 years. Like, he's so blunt with him about the whole situation.
Travolta's just trying to put Eddie down because he doesn't want him to be a threat. He's trying to just prove he's the bigger man.
Yeah. And he's saying, like, she's 9 years old. Like, I picked up Maureen from the gutter. Like, got her off of drugs. We quit cigarettes together. Yeah, and he says that as he's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. we quit and then we restarted together. And then... he's like, Travolta just is incapable of like letting it die. he's just like, all right, what if you come to the house and we settle this all together? He invites him to dinner.
And that's when I wrote down, I'm so confused at Travolta's angle.
his angle is, I need to show him the bigger man, the better man. I need to show it in person in front of Maureen. He's digging his own grave.
Yeah, he really is.
But it's just like that toxic masculinity. He just keeps building it. And so Travolta just storms out with Jeannie. Jeannie's like seeing like, okay, maybe my dad's like not on the level entirely.
This is one of my biggest issues with the movie is that you can't tell me that
Jeannie's a little too mature for her age.
A little too mature for her age, yes. But also that John, like Joey was never like the Christ saint like dad.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't take for him to get news that Maureen's, because he knew about Maureen's ex-husband Eddie since they met. Yeah. And but you can't tell me it took this day that he knew he was coming out for him to all of a sudden become a jerk and an asshole.
Yeah.
He's always been that way. And so my whole issue is like, you know, there would be a different atmosphere of a family dynamic present in the house than what we see. Because in this, it's almost like, he doesn't become a jerk until today.
That's also my problem. My one problem with this movie, or not my one, but the biggest is that whereas we get a lot of buildup with Penn and Wright, we don't get a lot of build up with Travolta and Wright. They're just fighting immediately. We don't get to see what this relationship was like.
We don't really get to. Yes, exactly. We don't get to see that deconstruct. We see it already sort of deconstruct,
falling apart.
And also with the kids, the kids sort of treat him like he's their dad, like he's a good dad and all that stuff, like the way they treat him. And it's like, you know, Jeannie makes comments like, dad, like, why are you doing this? It's like, he probably did this like all your life.
Yeah.
So like, why are you making these like statements of like, oh dad, you don't usually act like, don't tell me that he's probably always acted like this. That's an issue I had with this, where it was very unbelievable in the sense that, oh, you mean he was like a cute, cuddly, soft dad until this point? No. Like, the kids would be different. They would be different because they grew up with this guy as their dad. So, yeah. There was one bit. No, so, like, when he's about to walk out of the motel, and he's like, he either walks in the motel or he fights him. It's like one or the other. There's no more civil talking. And he says something like, if I come over, I'm walking out with Maureen.
Yeah.
And Travolta
was like, what?
And then he just leaves, which I thought he'd probably fucking kill him right then. But
and then Eddie's like, all right, I got to shape up for this. And so he goes back to Harry Dean Stanton and his wife. A montage to everybody's working for the weekend plays as they freshen him up.
Yeah.
You know, they do like a montage rant. No, I'm kidding. That doesn't actually happen. Everybody's working for the fair use copyright.
Yeah. So they so he comes over.
Yes.
And, oh, and John Travolta says, we forgot
bring
this.
Bring a friend. And so Eddie drags poor Harry Stanton into
which is another bit that we're going to get into at the very end, but it's another example of John Travolta digging his own fucking grave in this movie, that he's like, not only do I want you to come, I want you to come with reinforcements. So we get to the end of the film. It's like, you did this. He gets
your actions have consequences.
Oh man. But but like we say all these things about Joey making these dumb decisions. the performance that John Travolta
is really selling these performances.
Is selling it. He really sells that this character would make these decisions.
Yes.
You know, so like props to Travolta again with Broken Arrow. You know, like anybody else who could have taken like a very thin role and just played it very straight. Yes. Whereas you'd put John Travolta's role,
he's bringing a lot to it.
Yes, and like any other guy who would play this movie with no other added flair, it'd be like, this guy's an idiot. Yeah. Like, what's he doing? But it's because it's John Travolta playing it a certain way, where it's like, this guy's an idiot. But
you understand why he's doing this thing.
Yes,
like you understand where his mindset is.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So it's the dinner party scene.
This movie moves very fast. We're very near the end.
Right now, we're at the three quarters of the way through the film.
So he and Harry, Eddie and Harry Dean Stanton show up.
Yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton's playing a guy named Shorty, which is funny.
And he's not short. He's tall.
A tall guy.
So he has Harry Dean Stanton. He's got his wife. And
the wife stays in the car. Harry Dean Stanton and Eddie go inside.
They go inside. And his hair is like stylized blonde. Like it looks pretty good.
Immediately tensions are high. Marina's upstairs.
She's upstairs in her bed, and Joey's just like, hey,
sizing him up.
You gotta come down. And so Travolta comes down alone. Jeannie's there, I think.
Yes. It's him, the girls, Eddie and Harry Dean Stanton. And like things are laid out pretty quickly as to what the situation. Harry Dean Stanton just like is sitting there drinking at the bar. Yeah.
And like the bit where like Travolta talks to Maureen in her bed before he goes down to see Eddie and Shorty is that's when I wrote down like Maureen has made up her mind.
Yeah.
About what she's going to do.
Yeah.
How she's going to leave the family and go with Eddie.
She's like, at the very least, Eddie is honest about like what he is. You pretend that you're something you're not.
Right. And so, but again, this is three quarters of the way through the movie, and I'm thinking, like, is something going to change?
Yeah.
Is she going to have, like, a revelation? Like, you know what? I can't give up this high life, high class life. No.
She made up her decision.
She made up her decision.
A lot of conflict happens.
And she goes through with her decision.
Yes. Well, after Eddie and Joey have, like, arguments, he goes upstairs to find Maureen and just tell her what's what.
All at the same time, Joey gives Jeannie a beer.
Yes, he gives the little girl a beer. He's like, fucking drink it.
Yeah, because she's like, can I have a beer? Yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton just like has his head in his hands in the corner, sipping his like martini or whatever it is.
And that's what I wrote, like, the fuck is going on?
Yes.
And that's when I start writing down the sequence of events. The daughter is drinking beer. Joey pulls out a gun.
Yes.
Maureen tried to kill herself.
Yes, she slits her wrist, and Eddie pulls her out and is able to like bandage it up pretty quick.
Then they start making, Eddie and Maureen start making out on the floor of the bathroom right after she's tried to kill herself.
Jeannie comes upstairs. Eddie tells her, I can't be your dad. Joey's the dad for you. And I can't be your best friend. I can be your second best friend. To his daughter.
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck, man? can't give this girl anything.
Maureen heads downstairs with Eddie, and she's like, I'm leaving. And Joey, like, in a moment, accepts it. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, the girls stay with me, though.
Yeah, he does kind of accept it.
He's like, the girls stay with me. And she's like, that's good. You are a good father to them.
Yeah, like he's almost like quietly calming down. He's sort of like, it's weird. Yeah. Like, you felt it too, right? It's like, this is like, he's just kind of. So
Eddie, Harry, Dean Stanton, and Robin Wright go outside. They get in the car. Joshua comes out with a gun.
With a gun! I'm like, oh, of course.
Yes.
Okay. Makes sense.
He comes out. He's ready to go. They subdue him to get the gun out of his hand.
Yeah, well, that's what my point with him digging his own grave. That not only did he invite Eddie to come over, he met Eddie come over with reinforcements. So, of course, he fires off a gun. Fucking Robin Wright, Harry Dean Stanton, Eddie. Eddie's
Shorty's wife.
Shorty's wife and Jeannie, kid, all attack this.
It's such a messy fight.
John Travolta's on the lawn of his like, you know, upscale suburban house.
And this is the moment where I was like, this is insane, but I know things like this happen. Like people like this exist.
Yeah.
And like, even if it's so far out of my like diaspora or whatever, like it's like sad and kind of just interesting to show this in a movie.
Yeah, and then after that happens, John Travolta gets back up, and he's with his three girls.
Yeah.
They all get back in the car. like Robin Wright.
Yeah, Harry Dean Stanton and Eddie. They drive off.
And they drive off.
John Travolta goes back inside with the girls.
And the movie. And,
well, first there's a little conversation, and then Shorty, like, his wife's like, turn the music on. He's like, just shut up. I don't want to talk with you.
And then Robin Wright's like, can we just be quiet?
Yeah. I think she kisses Eddie, and they drive off. We get this exact same helicopter shot that opened the movie. And then it cuts to black, and directed by Nick Cassavetes.
And that's when I write down, what the hell did I just watch? Like, really?
Yeah.
A bunch of... I mean, it's definitely a... it's a demonstrated observation.
Yes.
It's what this movie is. It's nothing more.
Yeah.
And you can appreciate the observation for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can take it as a concoction of chaotic nothingness.
Yeah.
And move on.
Yeah.
But that is what it is for me. And in terms of my perceptions of whether I liked it or not, I will say that I read and observed all of the intentional emotional beats you're supposed to get from the specific scenes, yeah. Like the sadness of Eddie's character and the chaotic nature of Robin Wright's character and the immediate, like, toxic masculine nature of Travolta's character. Like, I got all of that.
Yeah.
Respect for, you know, the craft involved in all that stuff, not just the writing, but those the actors taking on those roles very, very well. You know, there's not a squeaky wheel in this cast. I don't think so. So, yeah, I would say for me, ultimately, you know, 6 out of 10.
7 out of 10 for me. Like, I really respected this movie trying to, I don't want to say I enjoyed the experience of watching it.
Yeah.
But I liked the movie. Mm-hmm. I think it leaves some things unsaid that should have been said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I appreciate a movie that leaves things unsaid, but there's some things unsaid that I think just could have been elaborated on. We could have had a little more of.
Yeah.
Just in getting more of these characters.
I mean, like, they don't linger on the fact that Maureen is leaving her kids.
Yes.
With probably an abusive father.
Yes.
Not much about that.
I think that's very much part of the intent. Mm-hmm. Is that, like, it's just very, this is just how it happens. Like, it's whenever this does really happen, it's a casual thing.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, like, right as she's about to leave, like, she says something like,
be good for your father or something.
Like, well, that. And he says, like, you know, do you think you might come back? He says, I don't know.
Yeah.
Which
she's just a person worse, who's very confused.
Which is worse. Because to me, it's like, I'd either want to know if you're coming back or not. Don't give me a small hope that you may or may not be. And then I'm just waiting on you.
Yeah.
Because then what do I tell our kids? Is mom gone or is mom not gone?
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to show who they are as people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not very good.
Yeah.
Not very good people. So, again, a demonstrated observation.
Yes.
It's what it is.
Yeah, it's just a slice of scumbum life, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's basically the movie.
Yeah. What
I liked it. I think had John Cassavetes been able to direct before his passing, it would have been something.
Would have been in black and white.
In Nick's hands, like it well enough, he would go on to make The Notebook, which is very strange.
This definitely got the 90s treatment.
Yeah.
Some goofy, fun music over non-goofy, not fun
scenes. Yeah, there's some very weird music choices in this.
Yeah. That seems very characteristic of the 90s, wouldn't you say? From the movies we've covered so far, there's been a lot of those, like, this does not...
Yeah, the soundtrack, that doesn't quite fit with the thing.
This does not match the tone of what I'm feeling right now.
Have you ever seen As Good As It Gets?
No.
I mean, not As Good As It Gets, Rules of Endearment? Is that it? Rules of Endearment? Terms of Endearment. Terms of Endearment.
Oh, maybe?
James L. Brooks movie. It has, like, a very, like, Hallmark movie soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very distracting when I watched the movie. Hmm. But there's a part in it where it's Shirley MacLaine and Jack Nicholson, my roommate, are riding in a car together.
Yeah.
They're just driving along the beach, and it's like this Hallmark music's playing, and she like skids to a stop, and Jack Nicholson goes flying out of the car and like goes like 30 feet and skids into the ocean from like the sand. It's very funny. But the music is so strange for it.
Yeah.
It's whenever I find mismatched music, I think about that specific moment a lot.
Oh, you know what moment I think about when it comes to mismatched music.
What?
Oh, come on.
I know it's something we talked about.
Urban Cowboy.
Oh, Urban Cowboy.
When John Travolta literally tries to kidnap
his wife, and it's like
Deborah Winger. And it's like, put any different music over that scene, very different vibe.
Yes.
Very different vibe.
But
we just crossed the hour mark, Jeff.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Yes, She's So Lovely. It comes out. It's $18 million budget. It only makes $7 million, so it's not a Sam Van Angel hit as we talked about.
It's a flop.
It gets good reviews. Nothing I would say like necessarily.
No, not like Academy level, but doesn't Sean Penn win the Cannes Award for Best Actor?
I'm not going to play the music, but here's what I was talking about.
Wait, are you showing me the scene?
I am. I think it's very funny.
Okay.
Well, there's Jack.
Jeff is showing me a scene from Terms of Endearment that I'm watching right now. So. Cool. Don't know why I needed that, but I got it.
It's just like a.
Yeah. No, but this movie would not be nominated for any Oscars.
It was an August release. It was fairly dumped in a sense.
I think, I'm trying to think. So the Cannes Film Festival 97, Sean Penn won Best Actor.
Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars.
Roger Ebert gives a lot of things 3 out of 4 stars, as we talked about last week. The Screen Actors Guild Award. Robin Wright got nominated.
Well deserved.
Yeah.
I'd say all those are well deserved.
Yeah. Is there any Academy thing worthy? I don't really. I mean, what else came out in 97?
Okay, so it came out in 1997, so that'd be the 1998 Oscars. Let's see what was nominated for Best Picture that year. It was Titanic, As Good as It Gets, The Full Monty, Good as Will Hunting, and L.A. Confidential.
So
a big year.
A big year for movies. So this one slid under the radar, yes. Critically award speaking. Because, you know, there's always a thing where if it wins a lot of awards, it adds a little uptick with its finances. But
the acting winners this year were Jack Nicholson for As Good as It Gets, Helen Hunt for As Good as It Gets, Robin Williams for Good Will Hunting, and Kim Basinger for L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, there's no way.
Some great movies listed there. Titanic won Best Picture, obviously.
This is critically all right, but not critically good enough to like compete with any of those top dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So slid under the radar a little bit.
But you know, for Travolta, it's just another notch on his belt, even if it's not a financial hit. It's just him giving another good performance.
Yeah.
In a well-received movie.
If I was like if I was gonna put this on like his actor reel for anything, like definitely like the big bad villain role.
Yeah.
Like he could, I mean, just the nature of how it was shot too. Like I really, what you said earlier kind of shocked me because I never really noticed that. I really can't think of a time we're ever looking down on Travolta.
He is so big.
He's
like,
very
he's a big guy in general. Like, he's very tall.
Yeah, he's 6 foot.
He's tall and stocky.
5.
Right? Let's look up.
He's pretty tall. He's above 6 foot.
Travolta height. He is 6'2".
Okay. Still above 6 feet.
Yeah.
But stocky too.
Yeah.
Like, he's not thin, staying alive. He's stocky, you know. Yeah.
Stocky guy in this just looks huge, like in a good way. But yeah, I think that's basically the extent of this movie and his performance in it.
What's coming up next week? What are we doing next week?
Next week we are covering. Yeah, I guess I'll just launch into the ending bit.
I just want to know, like, context wise for what we're getting ourselves into.
I mean, next week he's moving on from this and he's taking his face off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I totally forgot. That's what we're doing
next
after
week.
This.
He's taking his face off.
It's, you know, great movie for this to be a predecessor to.
Yes.
Because talk about like the villain role. Like, he's stocky
he
and
take
face.
His face. Off.
I'm looking for a truffle pick.
I'm looking for a truffle pick. That movie's apparently really good.
I've heard.
It's getting like rave reviews as a deeply emotional and affecting like movie.
And the trailer made a bunch of people laugh at the Lord of the Rings screening.
Yes. Stuart and I saw Lord of the Rings in theaters, and they played the pig trailer, and everyone thought it was very funny.
Because the opening thing is just
I'm looking for a truffle pig.
You said
where's my pig? The trailer sells it as John Wick, but with a pig.
Yeah.
The movie's, to my understanding, not John Wick with a pig.
Because it's more about, like, the culinary aspect of it, right?
Yeah, it's a culinary aspect. Like, just, like, he's the emotional level of loss.
Yeah.
But the trailer's like, I'm looking for a truffle pig.
How are you doing that so effectively?
I'm looking for... I can do a pretty good Nick.
Yeah. Just from I've listened to the trailer many times because of how funny it is. Yes. You're doing it really well.
I'd like to take his face off. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
So we have Face Off after this.
Yes. Next week is for the listener.
98 or same year, 97?
I believe Face Off is 98.
98.
I don't have that in front of me, but. Next few weeks, you folks have this looking forward to. Next week, we have a face-off with returning guest, Matt Abaldi.
Oh, yes.
The week after that, you have Mad City. Week after that, Primary Colors.
With our friend Bill Clinton's coming.
Week after that, Welcome to Hollywood. We're going to be welcomed.
We are going to be welcomed.
And then the week after that's The Thin Red Line, which is quite a jump from some of these movies.
And all of these movies are... for the most part, hits.
Yes.
Every single one of them. Besides Welcome to Hollywood, which, again,
does not exist.
We don't really count that.
Yeah. Mad City, to my understanding, wasn't a huge hit, but it's a movie.
I mean, it's got Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Not that that makes it a great film, but, you know.
I think it made a tidy little profit. Oh, wait, no, it was a huge flop.
Oh, really?
We'll talk about Mad City when we get to it.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Comical flop.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
This did not do well.
Shit.
Take everything I said back.
I take it all back. God damn.
All right, so we have a lot of hits coming up.
Some lukewarm stuff.
Some lukewarm and maybe one or two massive misses. Yeah,
one or two misses. Still, we're kind of on the... rickety-rockety wave of...
We're still in the A-list era. Like, he's an A-list star at this point.
It's a rickety-rockety A-list era. You know, like, when we said this earlier, like, you know...
He's swinging a lot.
I told you that I had some...
concerns?
Not concerns, just like...
Trepidations
about calling this the A-list era. Because you're right. Like, this is the Pulp Fiction was the reignition of his career. But, like, and he does become a name and a face again. But it's not necessarily. It's a bit rickety rockety.
It's not necessarily the A-list era in the sense that it's all A-list movies, but he is an A-list star at this point.
Yes.
Like, he can sell a movie.
Yes.
He doesn't lose that ability until much later. Because, like, he has some big flops, but he's still, like, it's John Travolta. He sells the movies. He doesn't start doing direct-to-video action movies until the 2010s.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about in an episode that, an era that starts February 8th of next year, folks. Look forward to it.
My God.
Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, February 8th, 2022.
Can I just talk about how excited I am for the Wild Hogs episode?
Wild Hogs.
I'm so...
A Walt Becker film.
I'm so excited to talk about that movie.
It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
We have some... I won't spoil anything, but we have a lot of fun guests coming up for you folks.
Yeah.
We hope you continue to enjoy. And at the same time, we hope you continue to like, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Find us at TravoltingPod on Twitter or Instagram for updates and fun stuff. You can pop into our Reddit r/Travolting. Email any comments or questions to TravoltingPodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at JeffWSweeney. Find Stu on Instagram
at StuartElmer95.
Special thanks to Rebecca Johnson for our graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem Smith for our theme music. Have a great week, folks. Kurt.